Quorum is present. Clerk will note the roll. Representative Riffenberg moves approval of the minutes from the 11th meeting of the redistricting committee. Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Video first. Motion prevail. The minutes are approved. Members, before we get to testimony today, Mr. Gillespie just walked in, and I know he he wanted to make a brief minute of comments. If you could, members received email, I know, regarding a clarification of some of the population data that he had presented last Tuesday. And so just to give you a quick minute or two, if you'd like to just make sure those comments get put on the record, Mr. Gillespie, that'd be great. And then we can proceed with our presentation. Well, if you could just identify yourself for the tape, Mr. Gillespie.
Chairman, my name is Tom Gillespie, and I'm a Minnesota State demographer. My apologies. At the last hearing, I misspoke on three of the graphics concerning population change, that there was a calculation error in three graphics, one showing population growth between Minneapolis, St. Paul, the older developed suburbs, the growth collar and rest of the state. The growth collar and rest of the state should have been at a higher level. And the next two graphics, which are both pie charts, were similarly mistaken, and I have a corrected form of that presentation.
Yep. Okay. Was that for a handout purpose, Mr. Gillespie?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Just a handout to members and... Got
which I will give to the.
Eric can hand those out to us. And was that it then, Mr. Gillespie?
Okay. Yes, thank you, Mr.
We'll make sure members take that corrected packet of information home with them, and appreciate you taking the time to come back.
My apologies again.
Thank you. Members, as we develop the congressional and the legislative redistricting plans and the criteria, it's obviously very important that we hear from members of Minnesota's minority communities. As I've mentioned in the past, the goal of the committee is going to be to produce a fair redistricting plan that does recognize the population and the demographic shifts that have occurred throughout Minnesota, but also one that provides minority groups the opportunity for representation at both the federal and the state levels. Today is really the first of anticipated three hearings that we're going to have in order to hear, listen, and really to learn and gain expertise from these different minority groups. Three of the largest minority groups, the Hispanic, Latino community in Minnesota, as well as the African American community and the Asian Hmong community as well. So expect next week we'll have an additional hearing from one of these groups. As chair, I do believe it's critically important that we hear testimony from these groups before we proceed in developing the standard or the criteria, which we will move to adopt at the end of the month. I think the testimony we'll hear from today, as well as in the future, as we learn from these groups, is that we'll learn the population, the demographics of each individual minority group, as well as their business and their industries, as well as any social, cultural, religious, historical aspects and background, and even the food and the restaurants that make up these communities of interest. We're pleased today to have five presenters who are going to share their expertise and provide an overview of the Hispanic Latino community in the Twin Cities in the Minnesota area. Before we begin that testimony, we do just want to replay a very short video presentation which highlights the growth of the Hispanic population. Some members saw this last week, but it's just the highlight of the Hispanic population growth and the business presence here in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area.
The 263% increase, and North Branch grew the most, increasing a whopping 329%. It went from a population of just under 2,000 to more than 8,000 in 10 years. Well, the face of our state is changing too. The minority population grew 5.6% in the last 10 years. There are now more than 141,000 Asians living in Minnesota, up more than 62,000 from 1990. The African American population grew as well by more than 75,000 people. But the largest increase is in the Latino-Hispanic community. It went from more than 53,000 in 1990 to over 143,000 in the 2000 census. Bonita Sarkar takes a look at some of the reasons for the growth.
Jose Asada.
Family ties brought him. Now he owns a thriving taco stand at the Mercado Central. It's a Minneapolis shopping center on the corner of Lake and Bloomington.
Dos pastores, dos asada.
The Mercado is filled with people like Miguel. Each shop tells the story of a Latino business owner moving to Minnesota to realize a dream.
There's a lot of gaps, a lot of opportunities here, and better pay compared to the other states.
He and his wife, Maria, are happy to call Minnesota home. They feel welcome. They left California because they couldn't reach their goals there.
They think that the Hispanic people, they just come to take advantage of the things that the states give us. So that's why they probably treat us different comparing to here.
The growing number of Latino people in Minnesota isn't a surprise to state demographers. They've noticed the trend. Now they have the numbers to back it up.
Minnesota is changing very similar to the rest of the country, and we are becoming a more diverse state.
That diversity is very apparent here at the Mercado Central.
Con todo, cebolla, cilantro, salsa.
In Minneapolis, Benita Sarkar, Eyewitness News.
Again, members, in each of your packets, you have actually a very large, sizable packet of information on the Hispanic-Latino community and some different handouts in your files. They've been placed in arrange. Staff's arranged those in order, hopefully in order for the presenters as much as possible. So please feel free to take those with you and look through those in the days ahead. I found much of it to be of great interest, and I think members will as well. Before we begin, I do want to mention to some members have other committee hearings to attend. They may be coming in and out, just so our testifiers are aware of that. I think there's a caucus going on for the Democrats as well, so we understand if some members have to pop in and out during the hearing. And with that, I do want to turn the presentation over now to Mr. Rick Aguilar. I understand you're going to help facilitate the presentation this morning, several of our testifiers, and welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape, and we're happy to have you here.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Rick Aguilar. I'm the president and CEO of Aguilar Productions based in St. Paul. And once again, it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and talk about the Hispanic community here in Minnesota. Well, just a little bit of background. I think that of Aguilar Productions, and I think there was a handout given, a brochure. I think you should have that. I think you're getting it right now. Our company custom designs and produces marketing conferences, and we focus on the multicultural markets, Hispanic, Asian, and African American. And our goal, being the only company in Minnesota that does produce these types of conferences, our goal is to make sure that our Minnesota business community is on the cutting edge of what's happening in this country. Unfortunately, many corporations are not looking at this Hispanic market yet as truly a segment. But I think the new census numbers will point out this is soon to be 20% of your market segment. Do you want to understand it? Do you want to market to it? And I'm very pleased to say that we are celebrating our fifth year in producing these conferences, and we see that many of our corporations here are starting to pay attention to these markets. Is it difficult? Is it different? Yes. There are some differences in marketing to the Hispanic community, but certainly one of the reasons Minnesota's always had a business community that's been at least in the top 5% of this country is because we look at markets and we pay attention to them. So that's what our company does. A little bit of my background. I was born and raised here in St. Paul. My parents arrived from Mexico here, like many other immigrants, in 1930, found work in the stockyards in South St. Paul.
Right.
And, there we are.
That's where my dad worked.
Yeah. And lived in the West Side. I think if you know a little bit about the history of St. Paul, that was one of the first Hispanic communities, West Side of St. Paul. And they start living there in the 40s and 50s. That got to be actually, if we use the term, the capital of the Hispanic community, with the majority of Hispanics living on the west side until the 60s when it was actually taken down from the industrial park. But I think that one of the things we're looking at now since the 60s and 70s was that the flow of immigration from the Hispanic community was fairly slow. It was more of a community that came here, worked in a lot of the migrant areas, Worthington, Blue Earth, and then left and went back to Texas or to Mexico or to California. But now we're seeing that changing. I think if you look at the census, you can see the historical change that is happening here in Minnesota as these immigrants that have arrived here and that in the past had left, they're staying now. And you can see that in the numbers that we're looking at in the census. And we've all seen the results of the census, and I think that a lot of the people that were involved in the census were probably underestimating the count. But now, as we look, and according to many, many experts, the Hispanic community in the United States is now the largest minority community. And if you look at the population and the percentages of which this community will be growing, we are indeed in for a real changing time here in Minnesota. And I think that it's important that the sooner we get to understand the Asian community, the African-American community, and of course the Hispanic community, I think as a state we're going to be better off into using these different communities and realizing their importance to the state. So we do have a lot of different speakers here today, and we are going to talk about the population. We're going to be looking at the business segment, the economic development segment, and then, of course, the marketing segment. And I think as you listen to each one of these speakers, you'll understand that regardless of where they live and where they're at and how they've come and gone, we're always seen as one community. It's always been, according even to the media, one community, the Hispanic community. So with that, I want to thank you, and we'll start with our first presenter is Itmar Santiago, who is executive director of the Chicano Latinos Affairs Council. And what we're going to do this afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, is Itmar will identify a little bit and give a little presentation on our council and then go into the presentation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Santiago.
Thank you. My name is Itmar Santiago, and I am the Executive Director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council for the state of Minnesota. I'd like to say that other than the migratory patterns of Latinos from other states of the United States, Latinos in Minnesota come from many countries other than Mexico. We have Latinos from Guatemala, El Salvador, Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, Puerto Rico, Cuba, and Dominican Republic. All these countries are represented in the Latino population in Minnesota, although not in the same amount as the Mexican and Mexican-American people. The agency that I represent is a statewide government agency created by the state legislature in 1978. With the primary mission of advising the governor and the state legislature on the issues of importance to Minnesota's Chicano Latino community. That is the reason we have been invited here today. Of the more than 35 million persons of Hispanic Latino heritage that live in the United States, according to the 2000 census, 143,382 people of Latino heritage make the state of Minnesota their home. In the west-north-central sector of the Midwest region, only the state of Kansas, has a larger Latino population than Minnesota. Between 1990 and 2000, Minnesota's Latino population increased 166%, faster than any other racial ethnic group. Without considering any undercounts, the Latino population grew from 53,884 in 1990 to the number I just gave you, 143,382. Today, Latinos comprise the second largest minority group in Minnesota, this population among the top 10 states nationally in terms of Hispanic growth in Minnesota. While Latinos play an important economic role in the state as a whole, nowhere do they serve a more vital function than in the metro area and its two core cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Latinos in the metro area fill jobs in the food service, hospitality industry, construction, clerical, and retail sectors. They also own numerous businesses that serve not only Latinos, but also other sectors of the entire community. In addition to their economic contribution, Latinos bring a rich cultural heritage. Without Latinos, the Twin Cities would not be the economic and cultural leader of the Upper Midwest that it is today. As Rick said, St. Paul has long been the historical center of the Latino community in Minnesota. In fact, the Latino population in the city dates back to the 1910s. From 1990 to 2000, Latinos have continued to settle here. And the number of Latinos living in St. Paul rose to 97%, had a 97% increase. And in 2000, 7.9% of the persons living in St. Paul were Latinos. As for Minneapolis, from 1980 to 1990, Latinos began settling across the river from St. Paul, moving into the city of Minneapolis. The trend accelerated between 1990 and 2000. Today, Minneapolis is the home to 29,175 Latinos, more than any other Minnesota city. According to the U.S. Census, 36.85% of the residents in Minneapolis and St. Paul are members of a racial ethnic group other than white. Together, the two core cities are home to 36% of the state total of Latinos. 7.75% of the Twin Cities' total population is Latino, up from 2.74% in 1990. Aside from the core cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, Latino numbers rose in other portions of both Hennepin County and Ramsey County. In Hennepin County, by 2000, the number of Latinos rose from 13,978 in 1992 to 31,461 persons, the total population of Latino being 45,439. Today, the Hispanic community in Hennepin County is 3.25 times its 1990 level. That would be a 225% increase. In Ramsey County, the Hispanic total nearly doubled, rising from 13,890 in 1990 to 26,979 by 2000. Other counties within the seven-county metro area, which are Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, Anoka, Washington, Scott, and Carver counties, also experienced significant increases in their Latino population. In 1990, the seven-county metro area was home to 36,716 Latinos. By 2000, the count increased to 95,902. In 2000, Dakota County joined Hennepin and Ramsey as the only counties in the state with more than 10,000 Latinos. In 10 years, the population in Dakota County increased 159.8%. In Anoka County, the Latino population more than doubled. And from 1990 to 2000, Scott and Carver County showed explosive growth in their Latino populations, more so than any other metro area. The Latino population in Scott County increased from 407 persons in 1990 to 2,381 in 2000, an increase of 1,974 persons. The metropolitan statistical area includes the seven county metro area along with Chisago, Isanti, Sherman, and Wright counties in Minnesota and the Wisconsin counties of Pierce and St. Croix. The Latino population within the metropolitan statistical area climbed by 64,787 from 34,334 in 1990 to 99,181 in 2000, an increase of 188%. Thank you for this opportunity to present. If you have any questions, these figures were taken from the U.S. Census.
Thank you, Ms. Santiago.
Thank you.
Any questions for members? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome to the committee, Ms. Santiago.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions related to the census count. You cite figures on page one by prefacing without considering an undercount. I know that the Chicano Latino Affairs Council was involved in the census awareness activities this last year, as the council has been involved in previous census counts. I'm just wondering if you can share with us your take on how accurate the census was in terms of counting Latinos in the state of Minnesota this past year.
Mr. Chairman.
Santiago.
Mr. Chairman, Representative. I can't very, you know, tell you for sure if there was an undercount. I did mention without considering an undercount, because there has been talk in the community that there are some people that were missed in the census, in the 2000 census. We don't know how many people were on the, were missed by the census. That's why I included that in my testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Santiago, looking at the numbers that the census came up with for Latinos in the state of Minnesota, I was actually pleasantly surprised. I have been hearing projections from both our state demographer as well as from the U.S. Census that the numbers would not be as big as it, as they turned out to be. It seems to me that that's kind of been a recurring pattern with census counts, that usually the projections wind up being far shorter than what the counts are going to be. Was that your sense when you looked at the census numbers that they were higher than what the projections were? And I guess what I'm getting at here is that one of the things that we have to do, Mr. Chair and Ms. Santiago, is we have to draw district lines, obviously based by the parameters that the U.S. Census gives us. And in the past, the U.S. Census has given us parameters that have included adjustments made because of the understanding that there have been historical undercounts in some of these communities. And yet, this year, we've not been given that. And so one of the things, we're still bound by law, obviously, to go by the numbers that we've been given. But I think it's important for us to understand that when we start drawing these lines, that if there were recurring historical patterns of undercounting, to sort of try to make an assessment about whether or not that undercounting is still happening. We still have one other tool available for us to compensate for under overcounting, and that is the deviation number that we use for any one of these districts. The federal courts have given us up to a 5% deviation one way or the other, and in this legislature, I've heard us using everything from a zero deviation to maybe somewhere around a 2% deviation. Obviously, if we're using a 2% deviation, that we might then be able to compensate for some of the undercounts. So I'm just sort of laying my agenda out on the table very clearly for everyone. And I guess, you know, within your ability to comment, do you feel or suspect that we've broken the pattern of undercounting Hispanics in the 2000 census that had previously existed in the previous decades?
Ms. Santiago, and before Ms. Santiago, before you reply, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, Representative Mariani, we are bound by law in terms of using the census numbers, and that's a decision that was made in Washington that comes forward to us. In terms of the actual deviation, I mean, any deviation that we use based on a random sample in the next three-year process or longer, in terms of cities or counties going forward and questioning the census figures, would be nothing more than a guess on our part as well. In terms of how we apply the deviation. So, I mean, we are given the numbers, obviously, and those are the numbers that we move forward with in terms of drawing the boundaries, as you say. But Ms. Santiago?
Well, Mr. Chair, on that point, you're right. It is a guess. On the other hand, it's the only tool that we have left, given the decision in Washington, to try to make any accommodation that we can make. And it seems to me that becomes even more important when we have historical patterns of undercounting repeating themselves with certain communities. So I think your point is well taken. But to the degree that we can make any kind of intelligent adjustments that would reflect the reality in these communities, The only thing we're left with is the size of our deviation.
Sure. I just want to make sure, Representative Mariani, that any deviation from the deviations that we're talking about here is, and how we apply to the guesswork, it is only guesswork, and we have to be careful in how we look at that.
And Mr. Chair, it's guesswork that the federal courts allow us to do and exist in law exactly for that purpose.
Ms. Santiago?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we always knew that the estimates were a little conservative, at least in the community knew that there were more than 130,000 Latinos in Minnesota. So we also were happily surprised in a way, because we knew that a lot of people were counted, but we knew that there were more than the estimates were saying.
Thank you.
Sir, Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Santiago, I have just a basic question. I appreciate your presentation. I know most of it was based on information about Latinos, and then on page 3, you talk about Hispanic as well, and I don't know if I just don't know the basic answer to this, but the difference between Latino and Hispanic, or is it interchangeable? What is the difference between those two?
Ms. Santiago.
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, it is interchangeable. Hispanic is a term that has been given by the U.S. Census Bureau, and that is why it's quoted as that, but some of us prefer to be called Latinos.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Knobloch had a question.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
No, I'll defer to Representative Boudreau.
Representative Boudreau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Santiago, thank you for providing information to us today. I have a question about the number of countries that you stated that Latinos in Minnesota come from. I think I counted about 19 different countries. And my question is, do you have any information about whether or not Latinos are coming directly from those countries to Minnesota, or if they're coming first to other states and then to Minnesota? I'm just curious as to if you have any knowledge about that, and you could estimate in a percentage, you know, how many are coming from directly from other countries. It might help us know how acclimated they are to our state and our nation.
Ms. Santiago.
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, no, I don't have a percentage. From personal experience, I do know there are people that come directly from those countries. But there's also a lot of people that come from another state before they come to Minnesota.
Okay.
Representative Boudreau.
Mr. Chairman, and then Ms. Santiago, do you have any idea why perhaps Latinos have more, a higher percent in Minneapolis than St. Paul? Do you have any idea what... why that would be?
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, as you know, immigration and migratory patterns are very hard to determine why people move to a place, and my best guess is that employment. There's probably easier access to housing and employment.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Representative Knobloch, did you have a follow-up? Or?
No, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Santiago. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Aguilar.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representatives, our next speaker is Val Vargas, who is president of the newly founded Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Minnesota. And once again, she'll briefly describe the Chamber of Commerce and give her presentation. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Vargas. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your presentation.
My name is Val Vargas. I'm the CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Minnesota. This chamber is newly formed. It's 6 months old. There are no other chambers of commerce devoted to Hispanic businesses in our state. You probably are all aware that there is National Chamber of Commerce and that many other states in our country have chambers of commerce, and that there have been chambers of commerce in our state previously, but at this particular time, we like to think of we know we are the only one, and we are, it's been about 8 years since the last Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. What the chamber is trying or attempting to do is foster a sense of community and affiliation among Minnesota Hispanics. We are actively facilitating business relationships and networking opportunities for our membership. We are attempting to centralize business services. We are focusing on the specific needs of the Hispanic business community, including training and education and language issues. We work to promote Hispanic business interest in the legislative area, and that's something that is new for a lot of people in our community. They just simply don't know where to take their concerns, who to contact, and so we will be looking for outreach from the government representatives as well. We would like to facilitate networking and funding. We're in the middle of developing loan programs for Hispanic businesses. We want to become a resource for international trade contracts, and we presently have four resources internationally for doing business, and those are in Mexico and El Salvador. We are offering various, we are developing various business benefits for our members, and since we're only 6 months old, we don't really have a comprehensive suite of services at this particular time. The Chamber will spend its time, 40% of its time, in business development and networking and access to capital. Spend 20% of our time in training and education. 15% of our time will be focused on lending, and 15% on fundraising, and 10% on legislation and advocacy. That's pretty much the background of the Chamber. I think you probably all had an opportunity to read our mission statement. The difference between what we're trying to do now and past Chambers of Commerce is that we're not just focusing on Hispanic-owned businesses, but we are attempting to include education communities that work with international students who come here from other countries, and very often these students end up staying here. Mm-hmm. And this is our network. So we have business owners, education people, Hispanic professionals who may be employed in some of the large corporations that are headquartered here in Minnesota, and who are basically forming our volunteer network, and then the corporate community that we look to for funding and sponsorship. The goal of the Chamber is information clearinghouse for not only business services, but any kind of opportunity or resource that someone might be looking for within the Hispanic community. We intend to use this tool to get a lot of our information out, and this is our website, which is www.hispanicmn.org, and this is kind of a new tool that we're finding that the corporations like, because they can network through the community very quickly. And we have we link to our members and our corporate sponsors and the education people that are working within our organization. We do seminars, we do training. This is just an example of two seminars that are coming up. The marketing seminar is in Spanish. As I stated before, there's some cultural and language issues in our community. A lot of people that come here new don't speak English or speak very limited English, and so we offer a Spanish seminar. And then the other seminar is on sales tax, and that's being put on by the Minnesota Department of Revenue. So I know I mentioned that we have a volunteer network that comes from the corporate community. We also have a volunteer network that comes from various state agencies. This is a lending initiative that the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is doing along with 13 area community banks. And this will first be rolled out as a training initiative. and what the banks are interested, they've seen the census information too. And they, a lot of the community banks, specifically in St. Paul and Minneapolis, see the rapid commerce along Lake Street and along certain corridors, and have already been providing loans and other services to the to this community. But they also have recognized that this community is growing and moving out from these central corridors. In 2002, we planned to grow on this education and seminar network that the banks will help us be rolling out to the community into a capitalized loan fund. And that fund will be capitalized by the banks and some of the Hispanic business community members. The next largest piece of work that we are doing is a Hispanic student network. And within that network, we are starting with the high school level students who are either using or either involved in the Hispanic community or are involved in business initiatives with the Hispanic community. And we'll also be linking with technical, college, and universities. One of our largest partners already are Hamlin, Carlson School of Business at the university, and Augsburg University. These are just a list of some of our upcoming events. The momentum that we've picked up in the 6 months really speaks for the trend, the growth that Minnesota has seen in the Hispanic community. And I'd like to talk about that for a brief second as well. I was born and raised here in Minnesota, and so I know firsthand, when I looked around 5 years ago, I could see the changing face. I grew up in the suburbs. My family was the only Hispanic family where I grew up. And now, if I go back to that same area, there's Latinos in Target, Kmart, Cub Foods. So it's really a changing face, and the reason the chamber is happening now is a result of it's just needed. The new people coming into the community need to go somewhere to get acclimated, to have resource links to the corporate community, and to network their services between each other. The Hispanic business community is not just one industry segment. 70% of the Hispanic businesses are in services, and that would be business, professional, and retail. 1 in 22 adults will own a business by the year 2015. Latinas are starting businesses at twice the rate that their male counterparts are. Most of these businesses are family-owned businesses, and they will have all of the same challenges that all family businesses have, things that they don't have access to now that the chamber hopes to help them with through mentoring programs like succession planning and benefits and all of those kinds of things. And the businesses are of all types, from sole proprietorships through corporations, LLCs. We're not seeing that it's any one single business entity type. The demographic impact, I chose the example of Wells Fargo. They have two branches on Lake Street, and the one right on Chicago and Lake does 30,000 Hispanic transactions per week. And the one farther up on Nicollet Avenue, although they do about 40 transactions per week, 20,000 of those are Hispanic. I'm not exactly sure how they were able to get this data, but this is something that they have put out to us. They did a study, and I believe it was 6 months ago. The Minnesota Hispanic buying power is $2.8 billion, and I would also like to comment that that is from 1999 census numbers, and that there are well over 2,000 Hispanic businesses in Minnesota. These are the industries that our memberships are in. And as you can see, when you look down the list, it's everything. Even though we may be, a lot of us kind of, you think of the Mercado and like in the news clip and certain corridors where Hispanic businesses are, we're not all about retail. There's a lot of different industries that are represented, and you can't really put your finger on any one to say that, that this is the segment that would be affected by anything, because Hispanic entrepreneurs are in all areas of business. And that concludes my presentation. I just wanted to make one extra comment, and that is that the size of Hispanic business is also, people traditionally think that it would be a very small kind of maybe family-owned business, but we nominated one of our chamber members who was an importer, exporter, and this business did $8.5 million in 2000, and so we're talking about business segments and contributions to the economy that are quite sizable.
Thank you, Ms. Vargas. Before I recognize Representative Gray, Ms. Vargas, I just had a question. You may have mentioned this in terms of how many members are participants in the Hispanic Chamber. It's the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber. How many members were there in total?
Right now we have 52 members.
52 members. And is there a percentage that you have broken down for Minneapolis and St. Paul and members of outstate? What would the percentages of the breakdown of that be for your membership?
At this particular time, we don't have outstate. Our marketing strategy was to jumpstart the chamber here in the Twin Cities. We do have interest in Wilmer, Mankato, some other areas of the state, and we do have a three-year plan that would encompass those areas, but at this particular time we have no members from outside the 13-county metro area.
Are most of your members from the Minneapolis area or then St. Paul, or is there a percentage breakdown that you have of that membership?
We haven't taken a look at that. I don't know.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Vargas, impressive presentation. Thank you. It appears, you know, listening to the first testifier, that there's an acknowledged tremendous growth in the Hispanic population in both Minneapolis and St. Paul, and now you're talking about the financial strength that that represents and how you're mobilizing and coordinating and doing some things on that end. I'd like to at some point bring this to the political strength aspect, since that's kind of, you know, the environment we're in here is more one of politics and where people's interests, where their common interests, basically. And I guess the question I have is, at least in terms of our charge, which is redistricting, first of all, is there a political arm somewhere in the Hispanic community that kind of speaks to some of the political ambitions of that of the community? And secondly, is there, even in terms of the chamber, do you have any political interests with regard to redistricting? Do you see any relationship to how we redistrict versus the strength, the financial strength of the Hispanic community?
Ms. Vargas.
Intellectually, I would say that yes, that there would be some political, you know, connotation in where you draw the lines. However, I don't feel that I'm qualified to comment in that area. With regard to the chamber's political aspirations, we are a 501c6. We're not a C3, so we are allowed to do lobbying. We are allowed to get involved. However, at this particular time, we are not. And with regard to the Hispanic business community and their involvement and goals in the near future, if you have to take a look at how those numbers, and I think Ms. Santiago elated, you know, said how fast this community is growing from 97 to 98, 99, 2000. It's growing so fast that we are just starting to recognize that we have some political power. it's new to us as a community. And because a lot of the people are immigrants, a lot of the U.S. political types of things are also just as new.
Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Representative Gray, were you finished?
I did have a follow-up question.
Sure, Representative Gray. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Vargas, then, your personal opinion, based upon you know, your communications with other business owners and others in the Hispanic community, is there a strong interest in say, trying to fashion another district that might elect a Hispanic representative? Is there an interest in trying to modify the borders of some of the existing districts? Have you heard any talk about that? Is there any discussion of that?
Ms. Vargas.
Among the community, the people that are involved in some of the work, yes, I have. But as I said before, I don't really feel qualified to comment about that. I have heard people in the chamber's located in South Minneapolis, just off of Lake Street. I know that that's a particular high population area, and they have a political interest to be represented. Same with all the other areas that you see here. They do too. Again.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Let me just end with a comment, and that's, I'm certainly not picking on you. I should have asked this question to Ms. Santiago as well, and I do plan on asking this to the other testifiers, just from the standpoint of trying to get some feel of what the political ambitions are in the Hispanic community, what they're looking for from us as those who are given the task of trying to draw new lines. And so others who are contemplating their testimony, I hope they at least keep that in the back of their minds as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And as Ms. Vargas pointed out, it's interesting to look at some of the maps. I know the members were taking some time to look at the different demographic shifts there. So Representative Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Vargas, can you talk a little bit more about your members when they're marketing and trying to get additional revenues for their business? Do they typically try to appeal to the Hispanic community as a whole in the Twin Cities? I mean, if they're in Minneapolis, do they also try to get business from those in St. Paul and elsewhere and vice versa?
They would like to. Quite often they are not able to because they don't feel connected, and that's the role of the chamber. For example, some of the restaurants would like to increase their non-Hispanic clientele base, and so they, you know, they would do some research and do some advertising, and they want to market beyond their own community. And there are organizations like MEDA, which is Metropolitan Economic Development Association, that work in developing corporate networks for minority-owned business. But the problem with some of these established business development services is language. They're not bilingual.
Yeah. Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Vargas, do they see when they are looking at marketing to people within the Twin Cities, if they're in Minneapolis marketing to St. Paul and vice versa, do they see big differences in how they have to appeal to those different markets? I mean, do they shift their marketing philosophy when they're going after people in St. Paul if they're in Minneapolis? Or is it relatively similar in terms of how they try to appeal to people?
Ms. Santiago, I'm sorry, Ms. Vargas.
You're going to have a marketing professional speak with you next, and so I'm going to defer that question to them. My personal opinion is no, that it's pretty similar.
Okay. Okay.
And
I guess just generally speaking, Ms. Vargas, do you have, as you're trying to reach out and market your organization, do you have a general view yourself of what makes up the Hispanic community within the Twin Cities? Any particular definition you tend to use?
Ms. Vargas.
No, what we're seeing really supports the demographics that you've heard. There's a large Mexican-American community, and there's a lot of new Americans coming from Central and South American countries. And there's a very, very large international student base here in the state. And my personal opinion is that a lot of those students are going to stay here. They're going to try and stay here. The reason, my opinion, and the Chamber's opinion, the reason Minnesota is so attractive to others is the economic opportunity. It's better. It's not anything else. It's economic opportunity.
Thank you.
Ms. Vargas, do you see that opportunity continuing in the next few years ahead? I know you've had tremendous success over the past few years as the growth has continued and the economy's done well, but do you see that continuing in the next few years?
Yes, I do.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Vargas, we haven't had the pleasure of meeting yet, so it's good to meet you here in committee. And I want to commend you on the formation of the reformation of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Rick and I are old enough that we remember the old one in the 80s and the early 90s, and we were pretty sad to see that go, because I think it's a very important, it will serve a very important function, not only for the Latino community in Minnesota, but for all of Minnesota as well. I had a couple of very quick questions. I've been told that, and I'm wondering if you have the answers to them, I've been told that one, that the Mercado idea, that there are people on the east side of St. Paul that are toying with, or maybe even planning, creating a Mercado commercial district or Mercado center like the one on Lake Street. Is that, do you know anything about that? Is that happening? Is that going forward?
There's
Ms.
a couple.
Vargas.
Sorry, I'm not used to this protocol. There's a couple of initiatives. One is on the east side of St. Paul, okay. And there is another one and that one is being planned and moving along, and there's okay. some involvement with developers in the community. There's another initiative that's going to be looked at in the other corridor, high population that you see on the Central Avenue, Northeast Minneapolis.
Okay.
And that's why there's just tremendous opportunity and things going on in the Hispanic community.
Well, Mr. Chair, my last question, I understand the Chair has a number of other people that you want to hear from. I was struck by that you didn't know how many people were in Minneapolis and St. Paul and your members, but I took that as a good sign. I mean, I took that as that what the Chamber is less concerned with is, where their members or businesses come from geographically or political regions as much as your members are coming from everywhere. And that, I think, really speaks to sort of the growth of the Latino community, that at one time the community was heavily located in a neighborhood that Rick grew up in. And when people thought about Latinos in the state of Minnesota, they thought about St. Paul. And then in the 90s, they started mentioning places like Moorhead and maybe Moorhead, Wilmer and maybe Moorhead. And it seems like what's new in this decade is that it's everywhere. And I think that's a very good sign, a very healthy thing for the state. My question to you is, and I know you've expressed that there's an interest of the Chamber to grow its presence and its membership outside of the Twin Cities area. How realistic is that? Is that based on really good, sense that, in fact, there is a strong and growing entrepreneurial spirit in places outside of the Twin Cities? And what kind of businesses do you expect those might be?
Ms. Vargas?
Well, the reason I know that that's true is because we had a meeting, an open networking and membership meeting last night, and there were four or five people from outstate. And the last meeting we had in February, there was another four or five, six people from outstate. We work with the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, with CLUES, and a number of other agencies that have offices outstate. We also network with these other business development organizations that have federal or state funding to do outreach in rural and rural initiatives. Mm-hmm. And we know where the resources are. The chamber itself will not open satellite offices here and there. We will look to leaders within those communities to take that initiative, and we will develop templates for them to develop our, to deliver our programs and services in their own respective areas. So we don't really intend to go and open an office in Wilmer and an office in St. Cloud and like that, but we will support those initiatives, and they will be able to use the chamber name, but they will be managed by local leaders.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions from members? Not Mr. Aguilar. I'd like to proceed. I know that Mr. Cardona is not present, so perhaps Mr. Vallejos may cover that topic as well. But
okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives, and I also want to commend Ms. Vargas and her committee for founding the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And for the record, I am from St. Paul. I'm a member. And at the meeting the other day, I did see several members from the St. Paul business community at these meetings, and they are members of the Hispanic Chamber. Our final presenter is Ricardo Vallejo, is a gentleman that in as much as Aguilar Productions is about Hispanic marketing, is one of the leaders in Hispanic marketing, a very thorough professional who does work all throughout the country, and is a gentleman that has taken part in my conferences the last 5 years, and we're very pleased to have Ricardo Vallejos, who is the President and CEO of International and Ethnic Communications.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Vallejos. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ricardo Vallejos. My name is written there, Vallejos. And I'm president of International and Ethnic Communications and LatinoCreative.com. We're an advertising agency. Most of the work we do is for the national Latino population, the Hispanic market in the U.S. I spent a fair amount of other markets, such as Florida, California, Texas, as well as Chicago, New York, which are the primary Hispanic markets in the U.S. We are based in Minnesota. I have been living in Minnesota for the past 20 years. Came to Minnesota in 81 and have always lived here. So this is what I identify as where home is right now. I'm originally from Argentina. Came directly from Argentina to Minneapolis. And over the past, especially 10, 12 years, I've been more and more involved in a growing Latino community in Minnesota. I want to do this. How much time do I have? What I'm doing here, this is a presentation. I do a lot of lecturing at St. Thomas, the MBA classes, and MBC, the Master of Business Communications, as well as marketing conferences pretty much all over the country. And I do have a half-day training, a full-day training. This is a compressed version of a 90-minute presentation, and I hope to do it in 20 minutes, but I don't know what your timeline is.
That's fine.
Okay. Okay, I don't want to keep it short, but there is so much to know. These are general information about Hispanics in Minnesota and Latinos in general. So let's just move on with the presentation. A marketing perspective of Latinos in Minnesota and in Minneapolis, St. Paul primarily, which is where most Latinos are. And I want to start with a couple of definitions, but actually one thing I wanted to do, since I'm following Val Vargas from the Hispanic Chamber, is talk about three key trends that you are seeing all over the country, including Minnesota, in the Hispanic community. And that is entrepreneurship. People starting small businesses, and that includes Latinas. The new Latina, which is one of the segments many companies are targeting, is a very, very fast-growing segment of the Latino population. Latinos and Latinas are starting businesses all over the country for three key trends in the society. One of them is the move to outsourcing that many companies have. Many companies used to have departments that did various functions. They have been through the last waves of consolidation and even mergers. Many companies are outsourcing many, many services. Services that used to be done by a department inside the company are now hired to usually a small company in outside the company. And this outsourcing includes services and products of all types, in construction, in business services, catering, food, all markets, all services pretty much. Companies are beginning to outsource and have begun to outsource in the last 10 years primarily. And this has really helped entrepreneurs, including Latinos. That's one trend. The second trend is what is normally called in the culture as the glass ceiling, and that is problems that mostly women and minorities have in large companies to reach the higher levels of the company. So people doing well in a company get to a point in their careers, usually in their 30s, where they say, this is as far as I'm going to go. I'm seeing a few barriers here. I'm going to start my own company doing the same thing. And usually I've seen many people start businesses that way, many Latinos and Latinas. And usually their first client is their former employer, the first large client. And they start to continue doing the same thing they were doing as an employee, as their own business person. So, and the third trend is the what's called SOHO, small office, home office. The fact that now you can start a company in your home, computer-based, you have a computer, you have internet access, you do a website, you can compete with many, many larger companies if you have the right technology and if you know how to use it. And many of us have learned to use the technology in larger companies, and now we are on our own. So those are the three key trends. Another bigger picture issue is the immigrant experience. Most immigrants come to this country. The person who immigrates, who leaves the country and goes to a different country, is usually a much more of a risk taker than other peoples in their culture. And most of us who have come to the U.S. from other countries do tend to have a higher or a lower risk aversion and tend to take risks in general more than other people, including starting businesses. And as you can look at the wave of immigrants in the U.S., that is one pattern that you see. Immigrants tend to start a business. That's very much a part of the American experience and the immigrant experience. So move on with definitions. I want to define culture very briefly, take a minute to do this, because understanding the concept of culture is one of the best ways to understand the Latino population in the U.S. and in Minnesota. By the way, Minnesota is looking more and more like the U.S. in terms of the Latino population than ever before. It used to be that most Latinos or more Hispanics in Minnesota were either Chicano or Mexican descent, and now there are many more from Central America, from the Caribbean, Latino countries, and from South America. So it's becoming more diversified as a Latino, as a Hispanic community. Culture, one definition is shared of beliefs, values, ways of thinking, and language, what a group of people share like this. But that would be an Anglo definition, and by Anglo I mean the general population of Minnesota, which for demographic reasons tends to be Anglo-Saxon. And a Latino definition would be a values embodied in our people's history, traditions, way of life. One key the difference between the two definitions is the fact that in Hispanic culture we look at the past a little more in defining culture, in defining what makes us similar to each other and what makes us a community versus somebody else who maybe not be part of the community. Community is the second one. It's a very important word to understand. When we say comunidad, which means community in Spanish, usually we mean something slightly different than when you say community in an Anglo context. Here's a definition from a dictionary, and I failed to put the source. I think it's Webster or something basic like that. Community, a unified body of individuals, the people with common interest living in a particular area, broadly the area itself. and you talk about the Phillies neighborhood, the Minneapolis community, the Frogtown community, and you define community geographically very much so. In the Latino population, comunidad means a group of people that share a bond of identity with people or interest-based community. When we say de comunidad means in common, jointly, it's a broader description. It's not so much tied on the key difference here is geography. What the Latino definition of comunidad lacks is the element, the strong element of area, geographical area, that the other definition does. So beyond the definitions, what I want to cover here is the fact that, and this is what we do for marketing purposes. We work for many, many companies. Our clients, as an agency, as myself, an individual, as a consultant, our clients include The Gap, Amoco in Chicago, The Gap in San Francisco, GTE, the old GTE, which is now Verizon, the combination of the old GTE in Dallas and Bell Atlantic in New York, Carlson Companies here in town, Pillsbury, Toro, many 3M, many companies. And I presented these, I consult, and we do work communications, mostly marketing communications, also corporate communications for these companies. And most of what we help them do is communicate with Latino employees or Latino customers, the Hispanic market. So this is the context of what I'm speaking about. Latinos in Minneapolis-St. Paul is one community united by these elements: culture, values, media, food, arts and entertainment, marketing. When you do target market, usually you don't divide geographically, and I'll explain that. Family relationships, religion, social institutions. It's one community. People go from anywhere to anywhere in Minneapolis-St. Paul to eat, to see a show. For example, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is going to host a marketing advertising workshop in Spanish and English. It'll be bilingual. And they were looking. I told the office, I want a place where people can park and go. I don't want, ideally, not an either downtown, because many people in the community will just get lost. It's too much hassle to park and find your way around offices. And we were pretty open to any office space that was given, any conference room given to us anywhere in the Minneapolis or St. Paul. And this is to serve Latino businesses on the west side, North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, East St. Paul, in the main pockets of Latinos and Latino businesses. We end up finding room in Hamline University on Snelling, which is kind of midway, which is a perfect location, actually. We said, oh, this is great, because we have people coming from Minneapolis, St. Paul, from North Minneapolis, from everywhere, and it's a central location. People go for arts and entertainment all over the area, and I'll explain some of this a little more in detail. Move on to culture. I think I have 16 minutes left. Culture, key differences, and this is just an exercise in cultural characteristics. On the left side, you have what the general market or the Anglo market or Anglo-Saxon community, overall community, the mainstream, you would call it, has, and on the right side, the Latino, Hispanic, Protestant versus Catholic, nuclear family versus extended family. Each one is a story. We can spend a lot of time on this, and this is actually a condensed version, like I said. Even Hispanics, let's talk about the first point, Catholic. Even Latinos who are Protestant, who go to a Baptist church or a Lutheran church, have a Catholic element in their practice of religion. There are churches, Protestant churches, that call the services Mass, for example. And many secular, non-religious Latinos identify with many of the icons and principles and values of Catholicism. It's a very Catholic culture. The next point, nuclear family, extended family. When you say family in English, that should have been another definition, I guess. You normally talk about parents and children, the nuclear family. In Latin Spanish and Latino culture, familia means not only parents and children, it means grandparents and grandchildren, uncles, aunts, the neighbor. A lot more people. It's a much more larger group than when we say familia, family. dispersed mobility versus close family ties. Many Latinos choose to study when they go to college. If they go to college, they choose to stay in the same hometown, go to the U of M, go to some school in their hometown to stay close to the family, to be able to drive grandma to the doctor, as you're expected to do many times. And once they graduate and they get offers, they consider very seriously the offers in their hometown to stay near the family, versus a very dispersed, very mobile culture where you have people in this society very easily. I mean, that's why Thanksgiving and Christmas are such big, busy travel times. Oh, my sister's in Seattle, and my brother's in Atlanta, my folks, oh yeah, I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I'm here in Minneapolis. That's very typical in the general culture here, not so with Latinos. And that happens all over the country, by the way. Price conscious, I can go on, but let me move on. These are key differences in the culture. And these things are what makes Latinos much more similar to each other. We meet other Latinos, and we think, oh, this person is part of my community. We share these cultural characteristics. There are many more. These are actually thinking of marketing and advertising from a marketing perspective. Latinos' values. These are values that go beyond and don't really address moral issues of morality or issues of philosophy. It's much more cultural values. We're talking about the bottom line beliefs and what makes a person tick. These are contrast again. Individual orientation versus group orientation. Formality versus informality. These are contrasts between mainstream culture and Hispanic culture. When we do business with or associate with other Latinos, we have all these things in common automatically, and that makes us a community. We feel like, well, we are, you know, I don't, no matter where you live, really, the community is addressed culturally like this. Group orientation, when you look at individual orientation, in this culture, just to maybe cover the first few, you actually, in mainstream American culture, it's a very highly valued thing to be, to have an individual orientation, to be number one. We have all these sayings in English. To be number one, to stand out from the crowd, and he's their own person, his own man or whatever. You know, we have all these sayings because it's good. It's good to do that. In the Latino culture, you don't break the group harmony. Group harmony and being part of the group is so much more important. There are a list of stereotypes, quite humorous, about what Latinos, how Latinos see gringos and vice versa. And one of them is an Anglo-Saxon person saying, these Latinos, they have such herd instinct. They never go out in groups of less than 20, you know? And that's exactly what it is. You know, there is a real... somebody else, I was just doing a presentation at 3M, and one of the marketing people there was saying, that's right, about this point. When you see a Latino alone, you are seeing a very lonely Latino. And that kind of addresses the same issue. You know, you really have this group thing, that you are in groups. There are many, I have stories about each one of these points, but it's really a big cultural difference in cultural values. Informality versus formality, you know, where we teach business people and salespeople that to, you know, roll up the sleeves, be casual, break the ice. Yeah. That's being friendly. To a Latino, being casual, what somebody would consider being casual, could be seen as being rude. And instead, you follow protocol much more than in mainstream Anglo-Saxon culture. Protocol means respect. Now, to the Anglo-Saxon person, that may seem stiff, and they need to loosen up a little bit, but that's the way it is. One of the basic rules in Latino functions, and if you come to Latino events, is overdress. Overdress and you're fine, because just in case, you never know. Egalitarian, hierarchical, that goes way beyond the gender issues. It goes into social class issues inside companies. People want to know where you are in the company before I can relate to you. Where are you in your organization exactly? Because I know where I am in my organization, and so we need to be able to relate to each other. And hierarchy is very important. The idea of all people being equal is not as strong, in a sense. In American culture, it's very strong. All people are equal. But Latinos and Europeans say, but some people are more equal than others, and that's what we see. Time orientation, future, past, present, in general culture, in general Anglo-Saxon culture, the future. You know, it's a very future-oriented culture. What do we say about today? Today is the first day of the rest of your life, the brand new start of the future. About and the past, why do we study history? Well, because those who don't study history or understand history, what? Are condemned to repeat it. And so history or the past has a utilitarian value, and the real focus is the future. We want to learn about history, we want to learn history so that we don't make the same mistakes in the future, we do better in the future and everything else. In Hispanic culture, the past and the present have more value than the future in many ways. The present, the moment, enjoying the moment, the value of the past in and of itself, an intrinsic value of the past, and that's how we define who we are, not so much of where I'm going, but you know where I come from. And so the last one, efficiency relationship, it's again, stories about this one, and we can speak for quite a long time. Basic bottom line, being prompt means being respectful in Anglo-Saxon culture. Being direct, straight to the point, means being honest and they can trust you. In Latino culture, we say there is no point in getting straight to the point. Be tactful. Being tactful is much better than being straight, being direct. Save face, keep relationships nice.
Representative Seifert has a comment. Yes. I'm wondering what the opinion of the governor would be in the direct, honest, he's
yeah. He's, I don't think he's Latino. But yes, and the event, you know, being prompt and respectful, I have it across event there because one of the big things that comes to mind is punctuality. And people say, mañana, mañana, yeah, Latinos are always late. Well, you know, part of it is a value that says the event is important, not so much be on time and then what? You know, then you do whatever, go through the motions, but the event. I worked all over Latin America with churches, and once I was going to go to a church, and we were supposed to start a church service at 7 o'clock, and the church was about an hour away, so we thought, okay, they'll come pick us up at 6, and we'll be all set to go. This is very typical, by the way. It happened in Minnesota, too. And so we wait, and by 6 o'clock, nobody was there. 6:30, 7 o'clock, nobody there. Eventually, 7:15 or so, the pastor shows up with some people to pick us up in a van. No apology, just like, are you ready? Ready to go? So we go, and we said, well, of course we're ready. We've been waiting. I'm like, what time has the service begin, anyway? And he said, oh, when we get there. You know, that's it. When once you get there, you start the event. The event is what matters, not what time we start, if we start late or whatever. We were still eating at midnight, you know. So, but the event is really, it's a cultural value that we all share. If I have Latino friends even here in town, and we say, oh, we have a party, what time? 8 o'clock, okay. Show up at 8:30 or 9, you know. If you show up at 8, they may still be putting things ready, you know. They may not be ready to get going. So these are culture. Let's move on to media. In the Hispanic community in Minneapolis and St. Paul, we have, even though we are not one of the large Hispanic markets in the U.S., when I meet colleagues all over the country, they say, Minneapolis? What are you doing in Minneapolis? Well, I live there. I travel a lot, but I live in Minneapolis. And believe it or not, I tell them, we have a community, an interesting Hispanic community. These are various media-related icons, logos. Aguilar Productions, of course, puts together the conference. People go there from all over Minnesota, all over Minneapolis, St. Paul. Some of the newspapers, Nuestra Gente, La Prensa de Minnesota. These are newspapers, radio programs. La Vida y Sabor, a publication. These are all local Latino media, mostly, that the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce has a website, as well as a future newsletter. And Aldia is a CLAC, Chicano Latino First Council newsletter. All of these publications and communities flow seamlessly between Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's one community. You can open a page and see an ad for a business on the west side of St. Paul, another one in North Minneapolis, and then flip the page and South Minneapolis and all over the place. It's really one community, one media environment. And when people place media, you know, you do it in either community, either city, because it's one community. So I want to mention just quickly a little bit of history here of La Voz Latina, the logo there in the middle. I helped launch La Voz Latina a few years ago. Tim Spitzak is the editor of the St. Paul Voice, Lower Town News, and another newspaper, and he began a Spanish language newspaper, La Voz Latina. In the beginning, I helped him start. The first year, I did a lot of the writing and work, the editorial work for that newspaper, and until we found people to help him. And initially, it was La Voz de St. Paul, because it was the Hispanic version of the St. Paul voice. Right away, right off the bat, we started to distribute everywhere. Distribution on the west side of St. Paul, elsewhere in St. Paul, South Minneapolis, all over Minneapolis, the Latino areas of Minneapolis. And the Latino business people in Minneapolis were saying, well, yeah, of course, I can put an ad, but why don't you do a Voz de Minneapolis? Then we'll put an ad in there. You know, they thought St. Paul, you know, we're in Minneapolis. Is La Voz, is Latino or what? They just were confused about it because we don't think of one or the other. It's one Latino community. Mm-hmm. And you see people going back and forth. Eventually, Tim finally, you know, was convinced to change the name, which I wanted the name from the beginning, La Voz Latina, something more generic that would reach the full market, would represent with the name what it does, which is reaching the Latino market in Minneapolis and St. Paul. What else we have? Marketing, okay. Just a quick one. There are many segmentation strategies when you do Hispanic marketing. And these are in order of general usage. When we do Hispanic marketing, when various companies target the market, when Verizon begins to do national programs, this is what the segmentation strategies are. First of all, language dominance. Are these Spanish dominant Latinos, English dominant, bilingual? Are they comfortable with Spanglish? Many questions on language dominance. Once that is defined, sometimes that's all you do to segment, and you have a version in Spanish, one in English, or whatever, to segment the Hispanic market. Another way, another form of segmentation would be the length of residency in the U.S. And the numbers that usually are used are under 5 years, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 plus, four groups of Latinos. And depending on how long they've been in the U.S., and that's number three there, level of acculturation. It doesn't always go together with number two, length of residence in the U.S., how long they've been in the U.S. But level of acculturation makes a difference on how they make decisions. Purchasing decisions, their buying motivation varies on that. Decisions in general vary on their cultural mindset and how acculturated they are to U.S. mainstream culture. Of course, the other demographic ones, age, gender, and then income are other ways to segment the market, and many, many programs, many marketing programs, many communication pieces are written or done or targeted to Latinos, Latinas 18 to 22, for example, or Latinos 18 to 34, just males, for example, so, or income. And then number seven, country of origin. Are they from Mexico, from Puerto Rico, Cuba, Central America? The main breakups there are really two, Mexican or Central American and Caribbean, which includes Cuban, Cuban, Puerto Rican, and Dominican. You also have South American, and in some markets, a significant numbers of South Americans. But the main two segmentation for country of origin has traditionally been Mexico, Central America, Caribbean. And then geography, where are they? So if you look at these segmentation strategies rated in general order of importance, until we get to seven or eight, we don't even talk about geography much at all until we get to number eight, actually, where are they? So that's why when we do, and to address a question that was asked earlier, when we do reach Latinos in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, unless you have a business that is going to do a very limited canvassing in the neighborhood, most marketing is done in both communities. And if you have a shop on Mercado Central, or in North Minneapolis, or elsewhere in South Minneapolis, the area of Nicollet and 25th, or in the west side of St. Paul, wherever you are, or in the east side of St. Paul, wherever you are, you do target the whole community, because people will drive to where you are from anywhere in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And that's where the media has that information. The news, editorial coverage, as well as advertising content, it goes all over. I mean, this is one community. So, two thoughts to leave you with. The immigrant experience, I mentioned that earlier. There are some key differences between the previous waves of immigration to the U.S., especially about 100 years ago, the European waves of immigration, and the one going on now for the past few decades of Latinos. some things we have in common, some things are very different. One of the things we have in common is entrepreneurial spirit, the risk-taking, the mobility also. A Latino that has come from far away doesn't see the end of the world in the neighborhood borders or the city borders. Community is whatever definition is made, you know, on a cultural basis. And I also wanted to mention a sense of place, you know, the whole idea of a sense of place. This is my place. People are very mobile within a community. People move, go a little farther. I wanted also to address here the internal migration. The one of the new trends in growth all over the country, and this really affects Minnesota firsthand, in the Latino community, is the growth of the non-traditional markets. It used to be that you found most Latinos, and I still do in some ways, in 5 markets, 10 metro areas in the country. That's where most Latinos are. Minnesota wasn't even in the top 50 U.S. Hispanic markets. The new trend is the growth of the non-traditional markets. Atlanta, Indianapolis, Minneapolis, you have the Eastern Seaboard, then Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, the mountain states, smaller cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul, who are growing very fast, many and communities developing newspapers, grocery stores, restaurants, the whole economic infrastructure of a Latino community. That is happening all over the country. And a lot of the growth is not only directly from Mexico, from the Caribbean, from Central America, the main 3 areas, but also from within the larger markets. Latinos in Minnesota are coming from LA primarily, the LA metropolitan area, other parts of California, from Chicago, from Texas. There are many, many numbers that are moving internally that way. And the main reason, jobs. Jobs, better pay, a little better treatment. California, in the recession in the 90s, lingered for a long time in California. There was also a very strong anti-immigrant sentiment in California, and so it wasn't very difficult for Latinos. And for the last few winters, except this last one, it wasn't that cold. So people were saying, it's not that bad here, come over, you know. And it's an exponential growth, by the way, because you have Latinos living in an apartment, and as soon as 2 branch out and get their own apartment, they fill up again, and it's exponential growth, and it's still growing. So it's going to continue growing. Oh boy, religion, just very quickly. Catholic, Protestant, there is an association of Latino pastors. They meet either in Minneapolis or St. Paul, whatever, and they represent churches all over the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. There are house churches in St. Paul, in Minneapolis. People who go to those house churches drive from all over. People drive from Woodbury to a church in South Minneapolis. People drive from the east side of St. Paul to a church in North Minneapolis. And people drive from Minneapolis to Guadalupe, the Catholic church. So it's one community in that area as well. And I think we can do some questions, if you have any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Very, very professional presentation. Before I represent Mariani, I'm just recognize you. I just wonder if I can ask a question. Members have the newspapers in their packets, Latino Midwest.
Yes.
And some other publications I'm sure you deal with your marketing. And mm-hmm. I'm just curious, do you view the stories that appear in here or the advertising and the marketing that you have to go through? I mean, do you target, you know, Minneapolis alone when you do your work to target this Latino community? Or is it all across the spectrum in terms of how you proceed in terms of the readership, how they look at the stories?
Yes. Yes, and that's why, yes, we see it, Minneapolis and Paul as one Latino community. And that's why Val Vargas, you know, I mean, she had done all the work, and I'm a board member of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And we had the office do a lot of breakdowns on our membership. They come from different industries. And we did breakdowns by industry in other ways. We did not do one in Minneapolis and Paul because we really see it as one community.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senor Vallejos. It's good to see you again, Che.
Yeah.
You know, with that story with the winners, you know, just before this, Mr. Chair, we were talking about a mutual friend of ours who lived here and now lives in Miami Beach. And yeah. She keeps talking about coming back here. And And Mr. Vallejos told me that she lives on the beach, and I thought, and I said, she ain't coming. No way. She's not coming back. I just wanted to maybe just raise one question, but also maybe just challenge you just a bit. I think, first of all, it's an excellent presentation, and I think you're right on in everything that you presented. As you know, I represent District 65B, which includes the west side of St. Paul, which mm-hmm. is sort of the historical.
Yes, yeah, the traditional Hispanic capital of Minnesota.
Right, right. Yeah, we're losing that rapidly to Minneapolis and maybe Wilmer even, nowadays. And so I tend to think that I know my district fairly well. I don't know South Minneapolis as well as I do my district, but I do know a lot of things about South Minneapolis. And it seems to me that while I don't reject your basic premise that there is an easy free flow and an identity that transcends both those communities, at the same time, I do see some very stark differences in those communities. And perhaps the biggest one that I see, I mean, there are some demographic issues. There are a lot more Central Americans as a percentage mm-hmm. of the Latino community in South Minneapolis than there are on the west side. My guess would be that there is a much higher recent immigrant in Minneapolis than there would be in St. Paul.
Well, if you take the west side, yes, I'm sorry. If you take the west side, yes. Mm-hmm. If you include all of St. Paul, including the east side of St. Paul, and other parts of St. Paul where there are growing Hispanic communities, Hispanic areas, you could argue that South Minneapolis would tend to be a little less Mexican than the west side of St. Paul, mm-hmm. and also recency of arrival in the U.S. to be less time, because the west side of St. Paul is such a, you have second, third generation Latinos and many Chicanos, where you don't have as many in Minneapolis. But there's a movement in residents as well, people residing from one place to the other. And of course, we have the explosion of new areas. I mean, it goes beyond South Minneapolis and the west side of St. Paul. You have other mm-hmm. areas in North Minneapolis, other neighborhoods, where the Latino community exists, and it's pretty transparent, the communication. We know there is arts events and things like that, and people go from one place to another. I go to the Burrito Mercado a lot. I live in Minneapolis, but I'm there quite a bit. So.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Mr. Vallejos, and in fact, you kind of guessed where my next question was going to be, which is, I think the census said that we also now see more Latinos in the suburbs than we did 10 years ago. Clearly, one area is evident by the map. One of the maps here today is the area to south of my district out into West St. Paul, which I basically take as, the children of second, third, fourth generation, mostly Mexicanos, mm-hmm. Mexican-Americans buying homes in West St. Paul. But I also know that there's a pretty big growth happening in some of the suburbs of Minneapolis, particularly to the north and north and northwest, and then down into the Richfield area, mm-hmm. where I think there's a really heavy concentration of Salvadorans in the Richfield area. When you look at your marketing paradigm, a lot of what we talked about here is Minneapolis-St. Paul, but it seems to me that you also must account for the commonness that would exist between a Richfield and a Minneapolis Latino community, or a Brooklyn Park or an Anoka County with Hennepin County. I mean, I'm correct in assuming that that's happening, that you have Latino presence in growing numbers outside of the suburbs of Minneapolis.
Mr. Vallejos?
Yes, there are pockets here and there all over the suburbs mm-hmm. and everywhere, north, south, east, and west. However, the main core communities are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Mm-hmm. The bulk of the communities and the businesses are clustered in several neighborhoods, and it's really breaking up, really, because it's not only the west side of St. Paul and South Minneapolis, but also moving into North Minneapolis, into East St. Paul, the Midway area. And so, yes, that's the core. And yes, it's true. Once you have that kind of growth in a metropolitan area, in Latino population, there will be pockets here and there in the suburbs. I have a house in New Hope, and there is a New Mexican grocery store in New Hope.
Wow.
And the one in Hopkins, and there are some in Chaska, and, you know, all over the source. But those tend to be pockets. They don't tend to be as populous. The real core clusters of Latinos, both housing and business, are in Minneapolis and St. Paul, in various neighborhoods.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Tingelstad had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the beginning of the meeting, you said we'd learn about everything, including restaurants. And I know in that video clip, there was some things that they were making at the restaurant. You know, I have a Scandinavian background, so it kind of looked like lefse to me, but I'm sure it wasn't. Can you explain what that was if you saw that clip?
I don't think I wasn't able to see very well. Tortillas, okay, tortillas, yeah.
Mr. Villegas, maybe you can expand on the market there in the Minneapolis area as well, and some of the restaurants. I mean, did folks travel across, you know, the river from Minneapolis to St. Paul to go to a restaurant for a luncheon meeting or a dinner meeting?
Exactly. Yeah, we I host a breakfast group, Spanish-speaking business people breakfast group, every month. And we meet in different restaurants, Minneapolis or St. Paul, and people come from all over, from either side of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis or St. Paul. And the location is actually almost irrelevant. We basically, where is good food? Oh, here, okay, let's go there. Same for lunch. We have lunch, you know, not every month, but lunch meetings too, groups of anywhere from 10 to 20 Latino or Spanish-speaking business people. Most of us are Latinos, but there are a few who speak Spanish. And we go to dinner to Boca Chica, for example, from Minneapolis. We go to Me Gusta on Lake Street by the Mercado Central. We go to Machu Picchu on Lindale and Lake, to La Bodega, Lindale and Lake, to all the restaurants in St. Paul, to El Amanecer, across from El Burrito. El Burrito has a great deli area, and, you know, we got together there with friends. So it's really pretty seamless in as far as restaurant goes. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we should put him on the spot and ask him for his favorite restaurant.
Really, so if you'd like to go on record for your favorite restaurant, Mr.
My favorite restaurant this week, Maria's Cafe on Franklin Avenue.
Representative Knobloch had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vallejo, can you talk a little bit more about the patterns of population growth you're seeing? I mean, we talked a little bit about sort of the historic west side in St. Paul, but there's obviously been a lot of growth in Minneapolis. Do you see, I mean, when I look at the Minneapolis population census numbers, I mean, do you see that continuing in those areas and sort of filling in those blocks? St. Paul is not growing as fast. Do you have any sort of projections based on your knowledge of marketing and what's happening on where you expect future growth for the next couple years to be?
Mr. Vallejos.
Well, I'm not very future-oriented. However,
ask the president.
I think that we're going to see tremendous growth in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. I think the west side has been the traditional side, and there are so many things being done to revitalize it that you will see many more newly arrived Latinos starting businesses and even moving to the area, to the west side of St. Paul, to make it a really solid Latino area, as well as the east side of St. Paul. And in Minneapolis, the South Minneapolis area, the Lake Street from Bloomington Avenue to Nicollet, and Nicollet Avenue, what they call Eat Street. Talk about restaurants. Also, very, very fast growing. There are many Latinos in those neighborhoods, the Phillips neighborhood, and Whittier neighborhoods, all over South Minneapolis. That's going to continue to grow very fast, and as well as North Minneapolis, the area of Central Avenue and 22nd, all that area, moving into Columbia Heights even, but primarily North Minneapolis. Incredible numbers of people gathering, restaurants opening, grocery stores, and I think the suburbs, the trend with the suburbs will continue to be pockets here and there, you know, getting a little stronger, but there are a few, four or five core neighborhoods in Minneapolis and St. Paul that are going to continue to grow. And I think it's going to continue to be very very much together in terms of the seeing itself as one community.
And Mr. Valle Hills, Mr. Chair, if I want to go to the Cinco de Mayo celebration this year, where is it and where do I go?
Mr. Valle Hills.
There are several Cinco de Mayo celebrations. The largest one is on the west side of St. Paul, along Concord Avenue. And very large, wonderful street party with all kinds of food and things. There are also a section, can you believe this, blocking Lake Street? They block Lake Street for a few blocks, not as long as, you know, what they would like to do it from Nicollet to Bloomington Avenue. Two or three blocks get blocked off, Lake Street in South Minneapolis, for this big Cinco de Mayo event. It's not a parade because it's not long enough for a parade yet. But there are plenty of stands and music, food of all types. There are also other festivals coming up in the summertime in South Minneapolis as well. So this is going to, this is a trend that will continue to move on, street-type outdoor festivals. And the traditional one is the parade on the west side of St. Paul. We will be there. Most people in the community are going to be there. I never lived in St. Paul, actually, always in Minneapolis. But I always participated in the parade in one way or another, so throwing candy.
Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch asked the exact same question I was going to, so I'll pass.
Is that a bio question?
No, the one on demographic trend.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, we focus a lot in Twin Cities. What can you tell us about equivalent in terms of rural Minnesota? There you do have some very challenges with greater distances to travel, but I would imagine if you live in Clara City, you know, driving to Wilmer might not be a big deal if you get what you want and what you need and you connect with people. Do you see the same things holding up in rural Minnesota?
Mr. Vallejos?
I'm not sure. I visited some of those communities, but from my perspective, I don't visit there much either. From my perspective, they are rural communities far away, with people who come here to consume what we offer in the Minneapolis and St. Paul. And people have come to arts events we've organized. Right now in Crearte, there is a nice, beautiful gallery of Latino artists on Bloomington Avenue and 42nd in South Minneapolis through May 5th. And people come from outstate, from rural Minnesota, to see that. People come to El Burrito, to the grocery stores, to other stores, to El Mercado Central from rural Minnesota. I'm not as familiar with the smaller communities. I visited some of them. I mean, know some people. I know that they come to the metro area, to Minneapolis and St. Paul, to consume Hispanic culture, which is what I like to see. That's.
Thank you. If there's no other questions, Mr. Aguilar, I don't know if you have any other comments. I think we're finished with the presentation.
Mr. Chair, representatives, thank you very much, and I do want to thank Itmar Santiago, Val Vargas, and of course Ricardo Vallejos for I thought was very informative presentations. And in the end, to summarize, I think what we heard today is that yes, I having been born and raised here and seen these historical changes, and I do mean historical. I think that we shouldn't take this lightly in what is happening here in Minnesota, because it will continue at a very rapid pace, and we'll all be here one day looking at a Twin Cities that could have 30% or 40% Hispanics. But I do think we are one community. I've always felt that way. I've always felt that in sharing what our presenters shared with you is that how the general public also sees this, the Hispanic community. And I think one of the things that that Ricardo mentioned is the fact that yes, we do do business with each other, and that is one of the values that is shared by the Hispanic community, is to want others in the community to prosper. And I think that there is no borders when it comes to that. The challenges, there are many challenges, and what do we have to look ahead of? I think that like any state that is going through a population growth like this, Minnesota welcomes these new immigrants, they welcome the new Hispanic community, and there's many reasons why they welcome them. One, they've taken a large share of the workforce problems we've had here, and we can go to any employer that has hired Hispanic employees, and they can sing the praise of these employees all day long. They're entrepreneurs. We've seen that growth, and they come and they want to start business, which adds to our tax base and supplies jobs. But what are the challenges? What are expected of these communities? Politically, do we have to be involved? Well, we have to be there. We have to be involved. That's going to be expected from this community to one day be involved. And do I see the possibility of a community in Minnesota and St. Paul and Minneapolis being one community being politically involved? Well, I hope so. I think that's something that I've always strived to do, is to make sure that our community is involved politically and economically. That will be expected of this community as we grow. Will we answer the challenge? Yes, if we're given the opportunity. Would having St. Paul and Minneapolis being seen as one Hispanic community give us that situation? Yes. And that's something that I know, and many of the Hispanics that have been politically involved will take on that challenge, and we will present Hispanic candidates, and we will one day see a very, very politically involved community. And that's not something that we're going to guess on, like the census. That is something that's going to happen, because there are people here that want to make that happen. So in wrapping up, I want to thank you very much, and I see that many of the representatives have been able to stay through this presentation. As for myself, I think that Representative Mariani mentioned a little bit about him and I going back into the past. And yes, there was several things that happened to this Hispanic community. And there's always evolution in the Hispanic community, because there was an Hispanic Chamber of Commerce here started in 1980. And that ended in 1995. And what happened to that group was they evolved. This was a group of Hispanics that created a lot of presence, created some great Hispanic economic development opportunities, but they evolved. If you look at some of the members from that original chamber, Alberto Quintela, who was just an assistant to Mayor Norm Coleman, and was the first Hispanic assistant to a mayor in the history of Minnesota. He is now working with the legal counsel of Secretary Kiffmeyer. We also had Esperanza Guerrero, who was a founding member of the chamber, who has gone on to form Milestone Growth Fund, one of the most dynamic minority growth fund organizations, venture capital organizations in the country. And, you know, speaking personally, I just had the pleasure of leaving the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, going to the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, and this past year I became the first Hispanic to chair that board in its 130-year-old history. So these are the challenges. Are we one community? Yes. Will we evolve? Yes. With your help. And we do need help. We do need, as we look at redistricting, is there an opportunity for us to move ahead? Yes, as one community. So with that, I thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Aguilar. Appreciate the very educational presentation, I think. Very informed, I think, as well as other members. And we would like to provide that opportunity, recognizing those demographic changes that have occurred. For the entire Latino Hispanic community, as well as other minorities that we'll hear from in the future. So, that Mr. Vallejos?
Yeah. Yes, I welcome your dialogue. I think all of us are very willing to continue communications via phone, via email, with anybody that would like to dialogue that way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, committee's adjourned.
Thank you.